Good morning. Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. A U.S. chartered Iraqi Airways 707 has left Baghdad for Frankfurt, carrying U.S. Ambassador Nathaniel Howell, four fellow diplomats, and about 25 other Americans. Correspondent Alan Pizzi reports.
The last American-organized evacuation flight from Kuwait brought out 14 Americans, including the last five diplomats from the U.S. Embassy there and 15 Canadians. They were joined in Baghdad by another 16 Americans, including three more diplomats, and 49 other foreigners for the onward flight to Frankfurt, Germany. The American diplomats from Kuwait stayed well away from the press, but Joe Wilson, the U.S. charge d'affaires in Baghdad, said all five of his colleagues from Kuwait look good and are looking forward to getting to Frankfurt. The U.S. embassy in Kuwait will remain open but unmanned, and the Iraqi government has said it will respect the inviolability of the premises, even though it no longer recognizes the diplomatic status of foreign missions in Kuwait. Only one American is known to be still in Iraq waiting for an exit visa. Gary O'Connor of Humboldt, Texas, had to go to the southern city of Basra to obtain paperwork so his visa could be processed. He is expected to leave by the weekend, possibly the last foreigner held hostage in Iraq against his will. Alan Pizzi, CBS News, Baghdad.
Iraqi television reports civil defense exercises will begin January 15th. That's the UN deadline for withdrawal from Kuwait. The broadcast said the public should prepare for chemical and even nuclear attack. Japan's parliament today voted another $1 billion in Persian Gulf aid, bringing Tokyo's total pledge to $4 billion. In Vienna, OPEC ministers endorsed continued high oil production to ease any shortages caused by the Gulf crisis. The Gulf crisis is being felt in far-off Alaska. Kerry Anderson reports from Anchorage.
Officials in charge of the Alyeska oil shipping terminal in Valdez say they are taking seriously an alleged terrorist threat from Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein. Alyeska's vice president of corporate affairs, George Wersch, says security has been stepped up around the terminal, which supplies 25% of our nation's domestic oil.
People do have a freedom of movement and could position themselves at any point to conduct a terrorist act. There's no guarantees the American people can prevent that.
Concern over security was prompted by an anonymous caller who told the U.S. Marshal's Office that Saddam Hussein was offering $4 million in gold for a terrorist attack on the Valdez terminal. Kerry Anderson for CBS News, Anchorage.
An Israeli Arab was caught today after he stabbed and wounded a soldier and a civilian who came to his aid. As Robert Berger reports, Israeli sharpshooters are now targeting Palestinian rock throwers.
Israeli military officials say snipers have been deployed at key trouble spots along roads in the occupied territories. Lieutenant Colonel Moshe Fogel, an army spokesman, says the snipers are authorized to open fire on Palestinian stone throwers.
We can shout out a warning, shoot in the air, and then shoot below the knees in order to injure and stop the person from perpetrating an attack.
Fogel says the shooting is tightly controlled.
We're talking about pinpointing the ringleader.
The new policy has set off an angry political debate. One left-wing politician described it as monstrous and illegal, while those on the right say the army is not doing enough. Robert Berger for CBS News, Jerusalem.
Farmers and business groups are praising President Bush's pledge of food credits to help the Soviet Union avoid famine this winter. Linda Tyra has that.
The aid package will not mean overnight relief. Delivery of food supplies through the relief package would not happen until at least next February. On top of that, the Soviet Union faces basic distribution problems and hoarding of food supplies. President Bush said the food aid includes up to $1 billion in credits to buy more U.S. products, mostly grain, through the temporary lifting of trade restrictions. Those restrictions tied to Soviet emigration policy have been in place for 16 years. But now the Soviets and the Americans say instability in the Soviet Union because of food shortages is not in their mutual interests. And despite critical Soviet support for U.S. action against Iraq, the administration insists the aid package is mere coincidence, not a payoff for cooperation in the Persian Gulf. Linda Tyra, CBS News, The White House.
This is Barry Peterson in Moscow. What is top news in America is, so far, no news in the Soviet Union. The first edition of this nation's national newscast had not a word about President Bush granting special aid to the Soviet Union. And the news came too late last night, Moscow time, for the morning newspapers to report it. And there is something else at play in downplaying this news, the danger of the West being too generous to the political embarrassment of Mikhail Gorbachev. He's under severe attack by those who blame his reforms for disrupting the old central planning system and thus causing the food shortages. Now, grateful though he may be for help from Washington, he must brace himself for those who will say again it was his policies that turned this superpower into a worldwide charity case. Barry Peterson, CBS News, Moscow.
The Soviet Republic of Georgia has clamped a curfew and other state of emergency restrictions on a small separatist enclave where violence broke out after Georgia abolished its autonomy. The Interfax news agency reports last night's crackdown in southern Ossetia followed three fatal shootings earlier in the day. Alexander Nevzorov is the Mike Wallace of Soviet TV, an acerbic anti-communist muckraker on the Leningrad program 600 Seconds. Last night, he went to a deserted suburban area to meet an anonymous tipster who claimed to have some incriminating documents. Radio Moscow reports that instead of leaked documents, the man had a gun, and after luring Nevzorov away from two bodyguards, shot him in the left side. The newsman is reported in satisfactory condition in a military hospital. At least nine people were killed early today in a series of powerful earthquakes that jolted eastern Sicily, sending tens of thousands into the streets in panic. About 30 injuries are reported. The strongest of five tremors measured 4.7 on the Richter scale. The worst hit town was Carlentini. Luciano Mangiafico is the U.S. Consul General in Palermo.
Rescue teams from the Italian government are still digging in two buildings that fell, that totally collapsed in the town of Carlentini. All the property damage, it's not believed to be major.
The island of Cyprus was rocked by a 4.6 earthquake today, the third felt there in as many days. Another strong earthquake shook northeastern Taiwan, causing landslides and killing two construction workers knocked off scaffolding. The Sri Lankan Air Force reportedly killed at least 40 Tamil rebels today. Planes and helicopters strafed a major separatist camp for 4 hours. A big welcome in South Africa today for Oliver Tambo, the exiled president of the African National Congress. Mike Sullivan was there.
There was a crowd of several thousand chanting, singing ANC supporters at Johannesburg's Jan Smuts Airport to greet the 73-year-old Tambo home. Tambo, however, last year suffered a stroke, so he apparently did not speak to the crowd, but his well wishes on being home were extended to everyone by Nelson Mandela, who's the deputy president of the ANC.
Tambo is back to attend the ANC's first Congress since it was legalized. Consumers are holding onto their wallets last month as retail sales fell 0.1%. That's the first decline in 6 months. New car sales were off sharply. Overseas, the dollar is lower. London gold is up $1.25. And on Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Industrials are ahead 4.5 points. Time on the roundup, 7:10.